ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सूर्यकारय चिकीर्षया समुद्राणि ग्रहादीनि चक्रे विरण्यथापरम्। In the 18th incarnation, the Lord appeared as King Ram in order to perform some pleasing work for the demigods. He exhibited superhuman powers by controlling the Indian Ocean and then killing the atheist King Ravan, who was on the other side of the sea, purport by his divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The personality of Godhead, Sri Ram, assumed the form of a human being and appeared on the earth for the purpose of doing some pleasing work for the demigods or the administrative personalities to maintain the order of the universe. Sometimes great demons and atheists like Ravana and Hiranyakashipu and many others become very famous due to advancing material civilization by the help of material science and other activities with the spirit of challenging the established order of the Lord. For example, the attempt to fly to other planets by material means is a challenge to the established order. The conditions of each and every planet are different, and different classes of human beings are accommodated there for particular purposes mentioned in the codes of the Lord. But, puffed up by tiny success and material advancement, sometimes the godless materialists challenge the existence of God. Ravana was one of them, and he wanted to deport ordinary men to the planet of Indra by material means without consideration of the necessary qualifications. He wanted a staircase to be built up directly, reaching the heavenly planet, so that people might not be required to undergo the routine of pious work necessary to enter that planet. He also wanted to perform other acts against the established rule of the Lord. He even challenged the authority of Sri Ram, the personality of Godhead, and kidnapped his wife, Sita. Of course, Lord Rama came to chastise this atheist, answering the prayer and desire of the demigods. He therefore took up the challenge of Ravana, and the complete activity is the subject matter of the Ramayana. Because Lord Ramchandra was the personality of Godhead, he exhibited superhuman activities which no human being, including the materially advanced Ravana, could perform. Lord Ramachandra prepared a royal road on the Indian Ocean with stones that floated on the water. The modern scientists have done research in the area of weightlessness, but it is not possible to bring in weightlessness anywhere and everywhere. But because weightlessness is the creation of the Lord, by which he can make a gigantic planet fly and float in the air, he made the stones, even within this earth, to be weightless, and prepared a stone bridge on the sea without any supporting pillar. That is the display of the power of God. In the 18th incarnation, the Lord appeared as King Rama in order to perform some pleasing work for the demigods. He exhibited superhuman powers by controlling the Indian Ocean and then killing the atheist king, Ravana, who was on the other side of the sea. Om Agyan Timidandasya, chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the first canto. It is describing the principal manifestations or incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead throughout the history of this creation. Srimad Bhagavatam's histories are not only limited to a particular country, to a particular planet, or to a particular universe, but it is describing various activities of the Lord and His pure devotees which have taken place in various places, in various times, throughout the many manifested creations. After all, Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami and written by Vedavyas. Vedavyas is a special personality, Trikala Gyan, which means because he is the literary incarnation of the Lord, he can see the past, the present, and the future. It is described in the Gita, Vedaham samatitani varatamanani chajana bhavashyani cha bhutani mam tu vedana kashchana. Krishna says that everything that has happened in the past, I know. I know all things that are happening at the present moment. I know every activity, every thought, every word of every living being throughout all of existence. And I also know completely everything that is yet to come. I know every living being in full, to every minutest detail. But no one can know me in full. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is not going to be like a literature of this world, because it is the word of God, the all-knowing. Vedavyas was the incarnation in literal form of Sri Krishna. Therefore, we accept that whatever is in the Bhagavatam is perfect. It is perfect because it is coming from the perfect source. And we also accept that it is inconceivable. Achintya. Achintya Shakti. The Lord has inconceivable potencies. And the Bhagavatam is especially dealing with these inconceivable potencies. People of this world are so much conditioned to the news of the radio and the television and the newspapers, where everything is based on the relative activities of conditioned souls. And therefore, we have a certain conditioned idea of what is possible and what is not possible. Or we read mundane history books about various wars and various discoveries and various political revolutions. They are all done by people who have fallen to the lowest, most degraded position of material life. After all, just to come to this material world for the eternal soul is a very low, degraded position. Therefore, what can such infinitesimal conditioned beings do that is very great? And if they do something a little greater than somebody else, it's considered something wonderful, and everyone wants to read about it, see it, talk about it. But Srimad Bhagavatam is something completely different. Srimad Bhagavatam is describing the activities of the Supreme Absolute Truth, who has no limitation, who is Abhigya and Swarat. Abhigya means all-knowing, and Swarat means Krishna can do anything he wants, anytime he wants. Sarveshwareshwara. He is the controller of all controllers. There is nothing impossible for God. If there was anything impossible for God, there would be no such thing as God. Because God, by definition, means the complete whole, the supreme controller. So therefore, it is not difficult at all to have faith in any story that comes in the authoritative literatures such as Srimad Bhagavatam. A devotee can immediately accept if someone says, how is that possible? Srila Prabhupada is giving, even in this material world, we could see what God is doing. It is described here that Sri Ram, he built a beautiful bridge across the Indian Ocean. Now, when we want to build a bridge, what do we have to do? We have to get big construction crew with all kinds of machines that pollute the atmosphere with noise and all sorts of gases. And then we have to take and put pillars going down into the ocean or build the suspension bridges. It takes long, long time, many, many years to build it across an ocean. Nobody's even imagined trying to build a bridge across an ocean. If we can build a bridge across San Francisco Bay, which is maybe 6-7 miles, we think, oh, that is a great accomplishment. The Golden Gate Bridge, it's famous throughout the world. Or the Brooklyn Bridge, it's about 3 miles. But we're talking about 800 miles. And how did Ram do it? He simply took rocks, but not ordinary rocks, not like these little rocks that we see in the temple room, because after all, he had to get a whole army across this bridge all at once. He was taking the peaks of mountains, which were miles and miles wide, and tying them together with vines and putting them. And it was all done in a matter of hours. So a materialist will think this must be some sort of mythology, some sort of symbolic fiction. Because after all, how could by these rocks, each one must have weighed hundreds of tons. How do you float it in water? Is it so difficult to understand? Srila Prabhupada is explaining, right before your eyes, God is doing something millions of times greater. Floating something on water is not near as difficult as floating something on air. Huh? Water has more density than air. And Krishna has taken planets. And right before our eyes, when we look in the sky and see the stars, or the planet that we're walking and talking on right now, it is floating in the air. There's no pillars. There's no suspension bridges. How is it possible? And this Earth is one of the smallest planets in this solar system that we know of. Planets like your Venus, Jupiter, these are just planets that we know. They're many, many times larger than this Earth. And the sun's planet is thousands of times larger than this Earth. And since time immemorial, for millions and millions of years, they are all floating. They never crash into each other. They always keep the exact same distance from one another. And people will say, well, that's not God, that's gravity. Where does gravity come from? It's just such an incredible invention that keeps these gigantic, enormous bodies of matter moving, rotating in perfect order since time immemorial. That is the direction of Krishna. So for Sri Ram to float these rocks on an ocean, that was a very easy thing. ocean, salt water. Salt water, everything floats easier anyway. That was a very easy thing. In fact, to float the sun in the air is an easy thing. When Krishna appeared on this earth, he lifted the Govardhan Hill with the little finger of his left hand for 7 days. And he was simply smiling. It was an easy thing. That mountain today is 22 miles around if you want to walk around it. For Krishna, nothing is difficult. So here we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore we accept all these stories as history. And however inconceivably wonderful and beyond our imagination the Lord works, it simply increases our appreciation and love for him. That's why he comes to this world in the first place. How is it that Krishna had 16,108 wives, 16,108 palaces, and all these servants, and all these relatives, and they were all living on one little island called Dwarka? There's no room. It would be more crowded than Bombay. Why would he want to live in a crazy place like that? But there was plenty room. Krishna could put the whole population of the earth on the head of a needle, and there would be plenty room for everybody. Everyone would have 10 acres of land. How is that possible? For Krishna, what is impossible? Inconceivable potency. If you could conceive of God, what use is he? He would be like us. We're conceivable. Therefore, a devotee, when he reads these beautiful stories, it simply increases his faith and love. So today, on the auspicious occasion of Dasera, we are reading this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam describing the purpose of Ram's incarnation. The external reason why he appeared was to kill the great atheist demon Ravana, because he was causing so much trouble, so much pain to the devotees. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chatuskritam dharma samstapanaradhaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Whenever there is an uprise in religion, I come to establish the principles of religion, to annihilate the demons, and to protect my devotees. This evening, of course, you're all invited to Dr. Alwa's home for. There will be a nice welcoming ceremony for new deities of his. We will discuss in detail, because we will have much time, this beautiful lila or pastime of the killing of Ravana. So please, if at all possible, we would like to see all of you there tonight. This morning, I would like to just speak briefly about the principle of what this pastime illustrates to us in our life. Ravana represents, although he is a historical person, he represents what is manifesting within everyone's heart and throughout society today. The desire to enjoy the property of God without the sanction and favor of God. The desire and the ambition to manipulate the resources of God's nature for one's own sense gratification. Krishna has created an established order within each universe, within creation. And that established order is that as ye sow, so shall ye reap. For every action, there is an equal corresponding reaction. The laws of karma. If you do evil, you must suffer evil consequences. And if you do pious work, you will accept enjoyment of great pious reaction. And if you surrender to God, you will transcend this material existence altogether and return to Krishna. But pious work entails sacrifice. giving of one's own immediate demands of the mind and senses to be charitable and good to others. And for such persons, there are heavenly planets, where the duration of life is far longer, the capacity to enjoy is far more. Ravana did not want to go to the kingdom of God. He wanted to make this universe his kingdom. And it is described how Ravana wanted to enter into the worlds of the heavens, the higher planets. But he didn't care anything for doing any pious activities to deserve it. But by his own prowess, and he had great prowess compared to any human being, he wanted to build a staircase to Indra's abode, bring his armies up there and conquer it. By his own means. So similarly, people in this world, they are so proud, they are so puffed up, following very carefully in the footsteps of Ravana, trying to create a wonderful situation for their self to enjoy by their own means, by their own powers to control. Ravana wanted to enjoy being a controller and create wonderful comforts and wonderful prestige for himself by his control. To the extent that he wanted to enjoy the goddess of fortune, Sita, for his own selfish, greedy, lusty purposes. Now, everything within this creation is the energy of the Lord. It is all Sita. It is all the expansion of the energy of Sita. Whatever we see is fortune, is it not? Everything in this world is a form of a fortune. And Sita is the goddess of fortune. If you try to enjoy even the slightest thing for your own sense gratification, what you are doing is you are trying to enjoy Sita. But Sita is meant for Krishna or Ram's enjoyment. Sita is chaste. She does not want to be enjoyed by anyone but Ram. And great devotee like Hanuman, his life was dedicated simply to bring Sita back to Ram. His whole existence was dedicated to this one principle, that let Ram enjoy Sita. Let me somehow or other assist in this wonderful, pleasurable pastime between Sita and Ram. And similarly, Bharat, Lakshman, Maharaj Guha, all of the devotees of Ramayana, they had one singular purpose in their life, to reunite Sita and Ram and assist in their pleasurable pastimes. But the demons, they wanted to steal Sita away from Ram so that they can exploit her. That is the difference. We find Lakshman, how devoted he was to his brother Ram. It is said that the whole many, many years they were exiled to the forest, the three of them, Lakshman never even looked at the face of Sita. He simply always looked at her lotus feet because he knew that her face is meant for Ram to enjoy. Such a consciousness. But Ravana, we cannot even speak about what he wanted to do to Sita. Because he was so proud, because he had so much power and so much money and so much gold and so many followers. In material life, the more you have, the more you become intoxicated with a fever that I am the Lord. The nature of material life is to have false pride in the desire to exploit the resources of material nature. And the more you have, not that the more you become satisfied, the more you become completely infatuated and intoxicated by that. Ravana had a beautiful wife, Mandodari, and so many other queens, and so much incredible wealth, and so much power, and so much prestige. Why wasn't he just content to live and enjoy? Because that's not possible. The more you have, the more you want. The more you feed your lusty desires, the more the fire blazes. As soon as he saw that there was somebody better, he had to have that. He could not enjoy or be peaceful or satisfied with all of the great conquered wealth that he had because there was something else that he didn't have. Don't think that Ravana was somebody that just simply lived so many millions of years ago. Ravana is living in your heart, in my heart, today. We all have that tendency. We want to be the enjoyer. We want to take the property of God for ourselves. And we're envious if somebody else has something better than ourselves. This mentality is demoniac. A devotee is humble. He simply wants to be enjoyed. And in the end, what happens to all the Ravanas of this world? Krishna says in the Gita that I am death personified. In the form of death, he slays everyone. Today or tomorrow. And at the time of death, what does he do? He takes Sita back. He takes her away from you. And what is the reaction? That we have to pay the consequences through another birth, God knows where. But for you who have tried in spiritual path to control your senses, to give up these greedy, selfish propensities, you know it's very difficult. It's as difficult as fighting against Ravana. Do you know how much trouble even the great Hanuman, Sugriva, Angada, do you know how much trouble they had fighting against Ravana? They could not defeat him. Now what if that same Ravana were to come in this room right now with his 10 heads and 20 arms, and he came in this room and looked right at you in your eyes and say, I am going to conquer you. He was a Rakshasa. He was nourished by drinking human blood. And he was given benedictions by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva that made him invincible. What would you do? Okay, I'm ready for the fight. Huh? He would just go like this. He would blow on you and you'd fall to the ground dead. Huh? What hope do we have against such a powerful demon as Ravana? And the fact is, Ravana is simply an insignificant manifestation of the potency of lust and greed. But lust and greed in its full manifestation is right in our heart, more powerful than Ravana. What hope do we have to control our senses and become saintly devotees, which means to conquer the Ravana within? What hope do you have? What is the answer? You have no hope. Ravana was so powerful, even Indra, who has a thunderbolt who could crack and split mountains in two, he was scared to death of Ravana. Vayu, Varuna, these great demigods, millions of times greater and more powerful than us, they were scared of Ravana. They could not defeat him.
They had to go to the ocean of milk and pray to the Supreme Lord, please come, you're the only one that can do it. He's causing too much trouble.
So similarly, we have to follow in their footsteps. We have to throw our hands up and say, we cannot do this. My dear Lord Ram, you are the only one that can save us.
You come into my heart and kill this demon. Just like the demigods and the devotees, they ask the Lord, you come into this planet and kill this demon Ravana.
My dear Lord, please come into the abode of my heart, incarnate right here in my heart, and kill this demon Ravana, because I cannot do it. I've tried.
And if you think you're doing it, that means you're completely a slave of this pride that is coming through Ravana.
And Ram is so kind that he is willing to incarnate in everyone's heart and slay these demons. If you simply, with a humble and sincere heart, ask him to do so. He is incarnated within the sound of his name.
Nama Chintamani Krishna Chaitanya Ras Vigraha.
There is no difference between the sound of the name of Ram and Ram himself.
When we call out in a state of true, sincere helplessness, the name of God,
it is God's guarantee that he will manifest himself within our mind.
If we chant only with our tongue, he will manifest on our tongue.
But if we really and attentively try to hear the name and chant the name from our heart, there in just a minute. Today I'm doing puja, so I have to.
If we truly chant the name of the Lord from our heart,
what you can do is if you can. Someone can help you bathe. Then and then alone will the Lord's name appear within your heart. And when he appears, when you chant the name Ram, he's armed with his bow and arrow. When you chant the name Krishna, he's armed with his Sudarshan Chakra. When you chant the name Narsingadev, he's armed with his invincible nails. There's no difference between the Lord and his name. They've come to kill the Kamsas and Hiranyakashipus and Ravanas within us. They're all there. Not just one of them. They're all there. There's a whole society of demons within our hearts. We're not talking about crazy people who talk about demons all the time. Insane. We're talking about the demon of these qualities, which are empowered by Maya, to invoke within us the spirit of exploiting God's property for our own greedy purposes. So therefore, the real truth that the Lord has revealed to us through this beautiful pastime is how you and me can be purified, protected, and how irrevocable, unconditional love can manifest within our heart. There is only one way. Cheto darpanam marajanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam. We must cleanse our heart of all of these unwanted qualities to lord it over material nature by humbling ourselves before the Lord and by allowing him to come into our hearts through his incarnation of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. We should not make friends with Ravana, because you cannot trust someone who cannot control their senses. We have been making friends with Ravana in our heart all our life. But in the end, he always cheats us. We should not become comfortable and make friends
with these greedy desires to exploit the resources of God's creation. We should humbly call upon the holy name of the Lord to remove these obstacles from our life and allow our natural loving propensities toward Krishna, toward Ram, to make our life beautiful and to make the lives of all around us, all those who are near, dear to us, and all creatures we come in contact with, to help make their hearts beautiful. Are there any questions? Yes.
Said that Krishna knows the past, the present, and the future.
Mm.
And on the other side, you see that it's our desire which causes us to. Whatever we desire, Krishna fulfills our desire.
Mm.
In other words, like, if I desire something, that is fulfilling that desire, that is something of future, is in our hands.
That is why Krishna is so great. Because he can do what you cannot do. If you know something, you're limited to know only those things that you have that. You can only know something that has some sort of a systematic understanding comprehensible to you. But Krishna is not like that. Krishna knows what you'll do, but at the same time, he doesn't interfere with what you do. He gives you independence, but he knows how you're going to use your independence. But his knowing does not interfere with your independence. You understand? His knowing not in any way, shape, or form interferes with your freedom. He gives you the choice to come back to him whenever you want. You can decide today, you could decide in 1,000 years. But Krishna knows when you're going to decide. You don't know, we don't know. And he's not in any way influencing. But he knows. That's inconceivable. Why is it inconceivable? Because you can't do it. Anything that you cannot do is inconceivable. Right? Therefore, the first principle in understanding God is achintya shakti, that he's inconceivable because he's better than us. Your brain is this big, right? Your brain is about this big. That's the capacity of what you can store. You can store this much knowledge in here, in all these little brain cells. Huh? Do you think Krishna is limited to a brain this big? Krishna doesn't even need a brain. He doesn't have a brain like yours. That in itself is inconceivable. He knows everything without a brain. Try to explain that in your medical seminars. That is the difference. Krishna can see through his feet. He could hear through his eyes. He could taste through his eyes. Can you do that? It's inconceivable. That's why we love Krishna. Because he's like this. If anyone else was like that, we would love them. But factually, if you love Krishna, automatically you love every part of him. And we are all parts of him. If everyone was part of you, I would love you. Then I could love everyone. If everyone was part of me, you could just repose all your love in me, and that would just create a universal love. But that's not true. We're all just little particles. That is why we want to love Krishna. Because he is great. Not great like Napoleon or great like Alexander the Great. He's great like Krishna. They're all dead and gone. All that's left of them is terrible rumors. Huh? Does That answer your question?
Why is the
different planets? It's the different planets that there are nine planets in this world. And all of them are revolving around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
What is the problem here?
Behind the universe? Because Krishna, well, there's many purposes. Whatever Krishna does has infinite purposes. But one is he wants to show you that he can do what you cannot do. So that you'll surrender to him. He could have created it another way if he wanted to. That's the way he likes it. The different planets facilitate different forms of enjoyment and suffering. So according to our karma, we go to these different planets. They're different atmospheres. And why exactly he does what he does, how exactly he does what he does, that is a wonderful topic to discuss. But right now I'm supposed to dress Krishna. Can you understand that? That in itself is inconceivable. I'm going to give Krishna a bath and dress him. Me? Huh? He's the Lord of the universe, the controller of all controllers. He's bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. He's everywhere. He's all-knowing. And he's waiting for me to give him bath. Huh? So I don't think I should keep him waiting any longer. But anyways, thank you all for coming today. And please come this evening.